The following presentation is from North Pine Baptist Church. We trust that it will help you learn more about God and His message for the world. For more information and to connect with us, visit npbc.org.au.
Jesus help me. That's our prayer. Let's go. Let me tell you Bianca's story. So my introduction to Bianca was a car park introduction, which is always a tenuous way to start a relationship with a young person. But nonetheless, her context was her family wanted to see her connected into a youth group. The church they were in at the time didn't have access to that kind of resourcing. And so her mum brought her and her sister along, came into this car park. And the side of the story that I only heard the other week was that she had locked the doors with no intent of getting out. She's one of them there. You'll be able to find her if you search hard. But nonetheless, we started a conversation that started with a knocking on the window. That introduction was the start of her connection into youth group, which was continued even as that church struggled to maintain a youth group. We were able to create a combined youth group with a local church. That relationship continued, and so she was invested in over many years by her leaders. She is still connected in with a local church to her area, and her mum is ever grateful for a tap on the glass that happened that night. And I tell this story because one of the key things that challenged me, I was challenged with in my first years of youth ministry, came from Matthew 25:21. I like optimism. I'm an optimist at heart. So it says, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's happiness." I find there great challenge and optimism in that. We know that there was two others in that story, one that receives the same kind of statement. He used his talents well, got five, gave back five. The next one did well with the smaller amount. The final one did not. Young people are an incredible opportunity, an incredible talent that we are entrusted with. And as much as tonight, I'd like to think about beliefs, values, models, practices, thinking about a motivated team, that these things are all beneficial. At the end of the day, the primary task is being faithful in the little things. And so that was the start of Bianca's story. There was no great strategy or strategic plan that says we do car park pickup. Yet, God worked. Perhaps sometimes in spite of our efforts. And so I hope that tonight will be the start of a big conversation, because a big conversation is needed. My prayer is that we'll be encouraged that whatever relationship we have or could have with young people, that we will pursue it with faithfulness. Let's have a look at where we were at last time we met together. Last time's talk was called Reviewing Youth Ministry, and we explored this question. Have we accepted a methodology of youth ministry that enables distraction, deception, or discipleship? And here were some of our key findings. An entertainment attractional model of youth ministry is ineffective at discipleship and risks distraction, or worse, deception. We saw that there'd been this grand divorce between discipleship and evangelism. The way I like to summarize that is discipleship is the context. Evangelism is the content. So segregating these segregates youth ministry from its mission, and an effective model of youth ministry must integrate evangelism and discipleship. And also that spiritual disciplines practice within community forms effective, committed disciples. We also took some time to describe where our church was at. Now, if you might recall, this quote is not of our church, although it fits our setting. It was actually of a church about 20 years ago, but it was still pretty on point. There is a steady loss of children and from church life through the mid-late teenage years. The church has a very broad base of children in Sunday school, but with increasing age, there is a steady decline in attendance, tapering to very few regular attendance in grade 11 to 12. Continuing into the early 20s, and thus this was described as a pyramid structure. So while a summary of a church in a very different context almost two decades ago, you can use those same words to describe us. And we thought we might do a bit of a recap and help you see the shape of the youth and children's ministry. There might be many who are wondering what has been the impact over these last few years. And I would just first say that COVID's no cover for where we're at. I think it actually does us disservice because we have no control over that. So let's focus on what we do have control over, because that will enable us to actually take action rather than simply wait. So this is the shape of young people about 12 months ago. We had about 20 young adults on our books. We had about 40 youth on our books and about 80 children. You can see that really clear pyramid structure. Basically, we lose half as we jump up each bracket as of 12 months ago. And this is also using the broadest connection of criteria. So that's attendance once a term at a program. It's a pretty low bar. But we had to pick some way of expressing it. Let's do the harder thing. Let's see what this year looks like. In the last 12 months, our young adult population is about half of any sort of meaningful ongoing connection. Our youth is at about 25. We'll look at why we would describe it in that way. There's a story behind the shape. And our children have actually increased somewhat, depending on how you want to count the figures. We have a fatter base to the pyramid and a much thinner top to the pyramid. If you wanted to have a grand shape what North Pine Baptist looks like, a martini glass isn't too far off the picture. You've got a fairly solid base, a really nice thin neck, sort of going up into the years, and then we start showing our aging demographics. Of course, one of the challenges of the pyramid model is that sense of, if these are our numbers, and they are, and if these stay the pattern and trajectory that we're on, the first thing that means is that for our current team serving in these spaces, the expectation is that we're going to be connecting with, last time it was 60, now it's 90 young people, and 10 of those will remain. 1 in 9 factor. That's a lot of effort for a really low output. Now, that's the shape of us currently, but it doesn't express the full story. So here's some more positive information in terms of our story. So first, we noted that there's a growth in the children's population. So that's something to celebrate. It's not bad to have a big base. The question is, what's happening next? And when we look at the next area, so our contact with youth is not as wide. We have narrowed that down somewhat, but it is much deeper. Our consistency is significantly increased. Just to put that in a sort of metric sense, some of the early data that we did a few years back looked at what is the expectation that we could see a young person on any given regular event that we run? 50% was the optimistic side of what that looked like, which in practice means 1 week they were there, the next week they weren't. It's very hard to do community well in that kind of context. Imagine having a family dinner and only rocking up half the time. And so our consistency rate is sitting at least at the 75%, so that means 3 out of 4, and that's in a COVID era, So while that's no excuse, that's a pretty good number, and that also accounts for our outliers. So that means the majority of our core kids, those that come, there's about 15 of them in that group of 25, they're there pretty much every week. And perhaps one of the big differences, if they're not there, they tend to tell us in advance, or we know that they're on, we know why, so they're unwell or some sort of factor like that. That means our follow-up is in a much healthier space. We know the story and the connection is much higher. So while our numbers might be down, our capacity in that group is actually higher than what it was. There's much more potential. And I also suggest that our young adult population is in critical decline. Chat with a young adult here. They'll tell you. It's interesting, there's some smaller data there. So for our young adults, if you're serving, so out of our 10 roughly that we have, we'll find that 6 of those are in some sort of active service role. Basically that means if you're at North Pine and you're a young adult, you're probably serving at least somewhere. So it's interesting that that's just part of that story. A little bit more data there, but that will help. So the positives, we have a stabilised core. That is good. There is amazing potential in that. The negatives, we really need to look at that young adult population. It's a critical area. And the other thing that would be worth noting is that our volunteer age profile is intergenerational. That's, from my perspective, an amazing win. Well done. Many people in this room represent that kind of intergenerational commitment, so thank you. So that means we've got people of all ages. It's not just a core of young adults that are running a Friday night youth group or whatever the particular ministry area might be. So that's great. But we also are an aging volunteer population. So the question that arose, and we flagged this in our previous talk, is this a retention or integration problem? So a pyramid shape of young people identifies a problem, but what kind of problem? So a retention problem assumes youth were connected to the faith community and then left. An integration problem identifies that youth struggled to find belonging into the faith community. The common example in youth ministry world is they talk about the Mickey Mouse ear effect. You have your church and then somehow disconnected on the side in some way, you have your youth ministry. I think too it's worth noting, I think there's an assumption that if we have a young person that is not here, that implies that they're in a church somewhere else. It's really hard to do that kind of data because if people have left, they've normally left for a reason and ongoing communication is not always easy. But the preliminary sense of what we have had feedback from suggests you're more likely to not be engaged in Christianity than you are to be in a church somewhere else, at least out of the population we've had here. So while I like that optimism, I haven't found data that supports that optimism. And what does that comes down to, the discipleship of these kids has been our responsibility. And so it's important that we take that responsibility to the furthest commitment that they're willing and that their family is willing to engage with. So discipleship, youth ministry. One of the key things that came out of our findings in the past influences is that spiritual disciplines are one of the key tools of evangelistic discipleship, sort of getting that pair back together. If there is little or no connection between the practices and content of the youth group and those in the multi-generational gathering, it will be difficult transition for young people who are used to a type of program that bears little resemblance to the one the youth group leader desires to move them into. Therefore, a Christian youth group must have at its core Christian content such as prayer, Bible study, singing, or worship in song. This content is what is typical of what makes up the Lather gathering or the Sunday service in our context. If a youth program consists of attractional content, e.g. Activities that use fun or appealing cultural activities as the draw card, transitioning from youth group to adult church will be problematic due to the absence of activities expected in the gathering that is not as attractional or evangelistic. So it comes back to this retention or integration problem. Retention problems, in my experience, act as a warning sign. When frogs start leaving the environment, you look at that and go, something needs to be done in that environment to maintain its healthiness, whether that's something toxic that needs to be removed or whether that means some sort of environmental change. And so if we don't listen to retention problems, one of the challenges is you get the explosive integration problem. If you have a youth ministry that has a healthy sense of where it wants to go and that's different to where the main service is going, that can cause great challenge for a church. It creates that kind of explosive final act if not addressed. So the stakes are high. I think that's something that has potential in our context. And so there's a challenge for us in that. And you could add to that the ongoing challenge of if we have young adults coming into our space, why aren't they staying with us? And we do have some connection from time to time, definitely more than 10 that we currently have. And so it's worth giving that some thought. Youth ministry is in a place where what comes before it and also comes after it directly impacts it. And so we can't have, I think it's foolish to not have those areas aligned. So we need a clear relationship between these two spaces, particularly that Friday night space and that Sunday night space. Just a few notes here. I think this is really helpful in an intergenerational context. It's the sort of comments that help support, well, what's positive action that we can take? And one is a commitment of the older church members to view the new congregations, new generations, not as competitors but collaborators in shaping new traditions. We also need a commitment to sharing the resources with this younger generation. A willingness to listen to these younger members and equip them for leadership and decision making. And the granting of freedom to influence new spiritual traditions. We also want to create a dialogue between various members of the congregation and movement away from a culture of control to a culture of cooperation. I just find those worthy things to prompt ourselves of once again. A final further factor, and this is part of the positive action each of us can take, and that's the notion of proportionality. So the spiritual growth of youth is directly proportional to the spiritual growth of adults. We believe that if adults are being discipled and learning how to share their faith, an authentic ministry to and with youth will emerge. The simple way of putting that is we can't give what we don't have. It's important for us to be investing in our own growth as disciples of Jesus if we're going to have a shot at investing in the discipleship of our emerging generations. And also likewise, just a reminder of the importance of parental responsibility that whatever parents do, their children are likely also to do. Children are fantastic mimics. So some questions that we're going to ask. The way we're going to sort of shape this next section together, so that's sort of some of the things that we took away from last time we gathered together. Our intent now is to shape it in a way where we ask three types of questions. We're going to do them in the reverse order there. So we're going to ask some why questions, we're going to ask some how questions, and some who questions. This helps us begin to go, well, how can we focus ministry? If that's where we're at, what are the factors that we need to put into place or account for and respond to if we're going to have a good shot at having a positive outcome? Noting that the whole heart is that we remain faithful in the little things, but part of that is these steps. It's going to look a little bit like that, but it will make a little bit more sense as we go along. So as part of each question, sort of block of questions, there's going to be three areas within that that might interact with each other or build together to account for that layer. So let's, there'll be sort of six layers into it. I'd also like to say that this isn't a claim to the most effective way to do this. The way sort of I would explain this is, imagine you've taken your car into the mechanic, you've popped the hood and you're having a look at the engine. Each engine is slightly different. This is just how I understand the engine to work, or at least one go at it. I'm sure it will change and adapt with time. But shared language can go a long way to more effective communication and also gives us that sense of shared commitment. We're also going to start at the bottom at that why level of the beliefs and values. Then we'll move up into the how level of the model and practices. Then we'll have a little bit of think about the team and also energy of the team. What's interesting is often the complaints or comments or feedbacks or whatever kind of language you want to use comes from the top down, not so much from the bottom up. That's why we've got it structured in that kind of manner. Okay, beliefs. What do we believe? A shorthand for describing this is what do we believe about God? What do we believe about people? What do we believe about the world? As a church, we gather around a shared set of beliefs. One of the tools that we've used in the past in the youth ministry space and some of our connect groups used was that Bible discovery method. And at its heart was kind of digging into these belief-like statements. What do you believe about God? What does it tell us about people? What does it tell us about the world? And my encouragement and part of the intent of even that Bible discovery method is we can be focused on what unites us. That's a great way into a conversation. What we also believe about any one of these factors overlaps with the others. So effective youth ministry must interact with people, God, and the world and how those two things all intertwine. But there can be times where one of those particular areas needs more focus, whether it's been an area that's been under-addressed, an area where perhaps the culture around us is shifting its beliefs on, and so as the church we have to work out, well, what's our language to express our beliefs in this area in a way that's helpful and doesn't create barriers. And so that's one of the things that we're, the dynamic nature, the complexity of what we're continuously doing. So, for example, in my experience, I've been in youth groups that generally have a firm sense of what they believe about God, and often they've majored on this. But I've also been on in conversations where youth ministry or youth ministry teams really have a sort of awkward interaction around expressing their beliefs about people. A really easy way of finding this out is try and get into a cultural discussion around LGBTQI, that whole conversation around what do we believe a person to be is and who gets to decide that. And so the other factor that I've often experienced is there's this strange love-hate relationship with beliefs about the world within the youth ministry space. Sometimes youth ministry tries to outfund the world or insulate young people from the world around them rather than preparing them to be on mission to the world. So they're just some shorthands. Obviously, what we believe is a big area and topic. And one of the great things in our context is that we have the Bible as our primary source. It's worth considering, too, what might be secondary sources that speak into that world. some example of that, depending on which part of the church you're in. If you're in the Anglican church, you're going to be looking at the prayer book, for example. You might be in the shorter catechism if you're in the more reformed arm of the church. For some, perhaps the clearest expression of their theology comes through their music. And that's a space that might speak heavily into what they believe or don't believe. And the other space where youth ministry tends to get into the more creative end of this experience is when it engages in that sort of critique of culture. I've seen people try and do youth group talks through memes and other like sort of cultural symbols and whatnot. But in the end, it's all an attempt to understand what we believe. So clarity and unity around this is so foundational for a group moving forward. I wonder, if you think back to your own time as a young person, what received more focus? Was it a dogmatic sense of this is who God is? This is how we interact with our world. This is what it means to be human. It's worthy to consider, but also consider what are the areas of my belief system that needs not updating, but work to be able to express that well to the world around us. Our world will continue to shift its language. It will be up to us to learn how to speak in a helpful and healthy way into that space. The next layer is values. Often people use beliefs and values in different ways to just try and define that sense. The sense of beliefs, we're thinking about what are the things that we can unite around, what do we have in common. At the layers value, we're thinking more what do we value that is distinct to our context. Values are shaped by the needs, opportunities and responsibilities we have, particularly within our local context. It's worth looking at our space here and thinking, we've got aged care on three sides, we've got two schools across the road. How is that going to impact our values? What opportunities of mission does that give us? But also, what kind of responsibility do we have if we're always on public display to our local community in those kind of ways? So those things should be accounted for. Some diagnostic questions we can ask to determine the strength or areas of strength or needed growth. When it comes to mission, are we driven by a clarity of the unique opportunities, resources, and therefore responsibilities we have or that God gives? Peter can sort that out in his next talk. But we have or God gives. Community-wise, are we people who know one another and are united together? And also, how do new people become known? It's worth considering at that community level too, what is on offer in our community that's not accessible elsewhere? Engagement, do we share a common way of connecting together and also connecting with others? You know, what are those common themes and elements? Is it the music we sing? Is it the way that we gather together? Is it the place that we meet in? It's worth asking why, how are we engaged together? An example from the past, when I first arrived at North Pine Baptist, there was a really high sense of engagement at youth group. There was a really clear way of connecting. It was that sense of event-based entertainment with sort of a God spot twist thrown on the side. You can also think things like Family Fun Day. So the engagement was high. There was a reasonable sense of numbers at a surface level. Yet there was still challenges around our sense of community. That did we know one another? One of the diagnostics I used is there was a whole lot of people I didn't know in that space. So you'd go both to the youth and to the leaders and go, hi, who's the name of that person? Can you introduce me? And one of the things that we discovered is more often than should have occurred, they didn't know. whether that be one of our leaders or whether that be the other young people in that space. So high engagement, low community. When it came to the language around mission, there was lots of discussion around come to this space because it's a safe, fun space. Clear mission. It's no comment on whether that's effective or not. There was a clear sense of mission. And so we looked at that and went, well, how do we respond? Looking at these sort of three different areas and concluded, well, the first thing that we need to give focus to is community. We need to work at everyone knowing everyone's name. Structurally, one of the ways that we supported that was, well, let's put each person, give them a smaller number of kids that they can start with getting to know. It can be hard to get to know 40 people, much more manageable if it's 10. Even easier back then because half of them would only show up half the time. So really it was 5. But we started with that. Another sort of more humorous element was what I call chocolate motivation. If I got your name wrong, you got a chocolate. I've given away 3 boxes of Costco chocolate so far. But the expectation that came with that is, but you've got to know everyone else's name. If you've eaten the chocolate, the expectation is shared with you. And so at our youth group now, names are known. Maybe there's a few less names known. Maybe that's a helpful starting point. But that's a culture that will continue to be fostered moving forward. Because you can be at a youth group of any size where there's a way for all names to be known, even if they're not known by all people. And so that's part of our response at this values level. We valued being known so that as other people know that they're known, they also know that they're known by God. So ultimately it will come down to at different seasons we will have different areas that require focus and input. And part of the challenge of youth ministry is determining, well, what's the next one? And often when you get one humming along nicely, it's about time to sort out the next one. So there's some of the why. Why will often drive what we do, our responses, our practices, things like chocolate motivation. That's just a practice. But it's expressed in those core beliefs and commitments of value. Model. One of the great debates is there this silver bullet model of youth ministry? The short answer is no, there is not, because you've got to respond to your particular context and needs and people that you have and all these other factors that we'll spend time doing. But there are important diagnostic questions asked, because the model, the question is, well, how does that effectively align with our why? If we know our why, then we can easily determine our model. The tricky part is most of the time there's already a model in play and already a why in play, and sometimes those things don't marry up as neatly as you would like, and thus begins the complex task. But some diagnostic questions to ask here is, are you driven by a desire to achieve something together? So these are sort of group questions. Are you driven by a desire to achieve something together? That would be a service-centric model. Are you driven by a desire to be together? That would be a social-centric model. And are you driven by a desire to connect with God? That would be a spiritual-centric model. Youth groups tend to naturally lean into the social connection element. Young people are great social beings, and that is a fantastic thing. And it's not that we can't have each of these elements in play. We want to have that sense of balance and connection between them. But my experience has been this tends to put the cart before the horse. A risk is that when the commitment is not deeper than a social commitment, when social gets difficult, when friendships happen, when dating happens, all those little elements that happen within that world, they can cease to have a cause to gather together because the social need is no longer fulfilled or just challenging for that season. So service is often defaulted to as the next layer of providing a deeper meaning, but the challenge here is it can become very task-orientated. We can become program addicts in some way, shape, or form, and miss the people for the group, the challenge that the group first sought to tackle together. I would note too that this tends to be our model of training up young people at North Pine. We tend to lean towards a some sort of junior leader or leader in training model, and there's a whole lot that's great to that. But there's also some factors that need to be taken into account. Because the failure of this model is when they became labor to achieve our goals rather than a team which is valued and empowered to contribute. There's also an energy and an experimentation that comes from young people that really should be an asset for the church to use with great care and guidance built into it, rather than a fear to be avoided. For a young person, change isn't change. Change is just doing something new, and that's fine. They haven't had some of those same setbacks and learnt some of the lessons that have been learnt by their older peers. And so there's something in that that should be channeled, and when we fail to do that, it's a great risk for the church. The other is spiritual. Now, spiritual is not my favourite way to define it, but because it sends the connotation that our service and social are somehow unspiritual. Think Venn diagram, think all interconnected. But there's a lot of language around spiritual conversation, spiritual content or formation that's increasingly frequent. So I'll borrow the terminology, plus, you know, it's nice having three S's in a row. And one thing that churches remain is a place within our local community where it's assumed that a spiritual conversation is on offer, that it's a gateway into that world. If you're in an office at work, that same assumption isn't there until the invitation is provided. One of the cool things about saying, when you have that introduction and say, oh, what do? I'm a youth and children's pastor. You either get dead silence or you get a question, a comment, something that's opening a door because there's assumption there that, hey, this is someone who can talk about that world with me. I'd love for more and more Christians to have that experience. I had some really good stuff by Sam Chen exploring some of that sense of secular and spiritual spaces and the way that they have been, the place that they've been put in our culture and the way that we can navigate that for great outcome. And also note that health in any of these three areas can be really mutually supportive. Yes, one can mutate and run away with the group, but as a whole, they support and help one another. In all these areas, it's important to balance and support growth in all the areas. It's part of the balancing act of youth ministry. So I wonder too, in your experience of the church, which area has done it best? Is the church the pillar of your social life? I know growing up in the country, there was guys where unless they were buying something from someone, the only time they connected with other people was in the church. That probably suggests more of their recluse nature, but it was the pillar of their social life. Is it the place of your service? Again, this isn't a claim that it should be the exclusive place of your service. Service is a wonderful way with connecting with different people in our community and being an example for Christ in that space. But maybe that's the primary way you're connecting to church, that service-based experience. I hope you don't feel like labour, free labour that's being used. I do hope that you feel part of a team. But I'm conscious that that is can be the experience of some. Is church the place where you find your deepest connection with God? Maybe you might need to specify which area of the church experience, whether that be on a Sunday service, whether that be in a connect group. But what role does church play in that space? Let's deviate. So that's sort of the three distinct areas: service, spiritual, social. I want to talk more specifically about models of youth ministry. So they're really big influencing factors on how we shape models, but actually get into pragmatics. What are some models of youth ministry look like? The space that we, direction that we're pursuing at this time is a sort of discipleship-focused model, Bible exploring with small groups. We'll talk a bit more about that in a moment. It tends to be that the spiritual elements to that we try to see dominate our decision-making, but also our community building, that sense of social connection, is something that takes a lot of time and focus in that space as well. I must admit that service is probably an area that we commit less time to under that model, and that probably needs some more consideration. Although that being said, we had slaves out in our slave auction recently serving and exploring potential ways that that could look. We want to do that authentically and at the level that our young people are at. But there are alternative models. One of them is the church planting youth group model. This is a sense in where youth group is a proto-church in preparation. It's a novel way of circumnavigating the integration challenge of youth ministry into the wider church. You can see my own, perhaps, sense of one of the limitations of that model. I think it struggles to have that intergenerational sense of family that we're called to, and so it sort of grinds against one of my beliefs there. But nonetheless, it's a model that's out there. Another approach is a family-based youth ministry model that's out of that big push that family is the and they would probably specify the nuclear family is the base sense of society. Obviously, that's shifting, but the way that we interact and support young people then becomes through the parent or parental figures that are available to them. There's less of an emphasis on a Friday night gathering. You'd be gathering with families together. It's just a different take on it. I think there's a lot of good stuff in understanding the importance of our parents in that model and the influence that they have. And the other thing that it tends to account for well is a well-attended youth ministry accounts for like 1% of a child's time. That's not just like Friday night youth ministry. That's if they're at a Friday night and a Bible study throughout the week and at church. That's 1% of a child's time in any sort of regularity. And so one thing I like about that family-based model is it accounts that families have not the other 99%, but a good chunk of the remaining time. Another approach is let's pick a mission or a social justice cause and we'll be a service-centric model. Again, there's a lot about that that's good, and there's some limitations in that as well. Obviously, you need a clear sense of why you're doing that and leaders that can express that in a regular way and also take that process deeper. So, again, not three alternative models that are out there that each try and tackle how do I disciple a young person in a slightly different way. Okay, practices. If we're a discipleship Bible exploring area, then what practices are we going to do to effectively enact that model? And the first comment here is that all that we do or don't teaches, and all that we do can be used to explore the Bible. For example, it was really interesting to see how one of the things that we did over the last few years is we did a number of combined events where we went around and drew together a number of churches, youth groups, to see what those spaces looked like. And it tended to be one of sort of three things was the dominant way they structured their time. The first is that sense of small groups, that smaller gathering within the bigger gathering is where the magic happens. And so they gave precedence of time and the other things that they facilitated within that process aimed to support that outcome. The next was more a worship-orientated model. Think mini church service. With our small group model, think mini Bible study or connect group. And so in a worship context, there was obviously a high emphasis on that sort of youth band experience, engagement with music, using that as a tool for teaching the Bible sometimes. And so it was really interesting to see that, and the number of young people in particular that responded so strongly to that experience and wanted to have that as part of their regular ongoing sense of who they are. The other was more the entertainment party youth group model. And so we came, there was a big theme that may not be a spiritual theme, it may just be slime night. Always pick on slime night. And so we found that there was groups that wanted to have something really inviting, a higher level of engagement, not necessarily strong sense of getting to know the community. And so that was another really predominant model, really focused around what activities, what are we going to do together, how do we up that social experience. And it was interesting too, then another layer of that, those sort of communal combined youth group events ceased in the wake of COVID, but then each of these groups got faced with another challenge. If we have limited time on a new format that's far less engaging online, what do we give the priority of our time to? The groups that tended to do the best in that space, in the connections that I had, were those that lent into the small group side of that. They ran an alpha course. They did something like that where it was a format already designed for that space. But just interesting to see what people picked. There was so many different attempts of activity entertainment-based models. I haven't met another youth worker who went, that was fantastic. But nonetheless, we had to pick practices. We had models. We had to pick practices to enact those models. And it was interesting to see what those two experiences threw up. And one of the things I would say is camping has always had such a core experiential moment for young people. And I think one of the reasons why it's such an effective experience is that it draws together some of those common dominant practices. It draws together small groups. It draws together times of worship. And it does have those activities, that social component. Not that small groups or worship is not social, but has those community building experiences as well. And so it's just interesting that something that's been such a mainstay of youth ministry really tries to unite together each of those practices. Now, we can have a reason why we're doing what we're doing. We can have clarity about the distinct things we have access to do that. And we can also know how we're doing it, but we ultimately need to have people to do it with. And so the one comment here is that there's always going to be a trade-off. In any context, there's a certain amount of resources, and that normally then gets trade-off for a certain amount of staff, and then a certain amount of way of making the volunteers that really do all the work make that happen. And so they're just interesting things that can be, to some extent, traded off. If you had the world's biggest volunteer team and a small amount of cash, you could run, even no cash, you could run an amazing youth ministry. If you just have resources, oh, good luck, but you're pretty done there. And if you just had staff, well, that's going to be a really expensive way of not achieving probably very much good bang for your buck. And so it's worth knowing not only what you have, but who you have and what skills and capacities they can bring to the table. And finally, how do we maintain energy? And my encouragement here is that we need to spend more time celebrating story. We need more Bianca moments. We won't always find out what happens down the track, although we hope that relationship built over many years has that kind of longevity. But we need more stories of where God's at work. And the people in this room, the people on our teams, are the front line of those stories. And so the best collectors of those stories. The other factor is to evaluate the empiric. Sometimes knowing the story, like knowing the numbers, knowing what's actually going on, helps give us that story to know where we need to keep pushing, where we need to celebrate and praise, just what's going on. So it's worth evaluating the empiric. There can be much encouragement, but also it can help us know when something might have reached its final season, and that's okay too. Another approach that can often be done is to elevate duty. We do need to capture the heart and the responsibility that we have as disciples of Jesus. We need to be committed to continuing that discipleship chain that is part of remembering what we do and why we do it.
Thanks for joining us for this presentation from North Pine Baptist Church. For more information and to connect with us, visit npbc.org.au.